listeners, you're listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies. We're your hosts, Sarah Cho.
And Sam Collier. And today's episode is all about feedback. So how do you give feedback? How do you receive feedback without crying or throwing up your hands? What do you do with those notes once you get them? What are some good practices to keep in mind so that you don't start crying? But I mean, there's nothing wrong with crying, but I think sometimes it can get in the way of being open.
I think I have the track record of crying.
I think we all do. And what makes feedback useful? And how could we all become better feedback givers and receivers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. So, general experience. First time early on was like writing. I was so afraid to give notes. So I was
now, when you say early on, do you mean like when you were 25, when you were 23, when you were 10?
Yeah. I guess when I was just first starting out, like even a playwriting class.
Okay. Gotcha. You know, yeah.
So I guess I was like 19, 20, 21. Even honestly, the first couple, feel like first couple of years of being grad school, I was like very timid and quiet because I was just so afraid of like, oh my God, everyone's saying like very intellectual things. And if I say something right now, I'm going to fart. I was like, I'm so afraid what I'm saying right now. And I don't want to talk. So I would always like hold back. And sometimes, you know, it's like I find myself when people are talking about a certain moment, giving notes, and then maybe I'll have notes in my mind. I'm like, oh, maybe I should say this. But the whole group has already moved on. I'm like, okay, I can't give that note anymore. Everyone has moved on. I didn't speak up quick enough. And I'm like, okay.
But the thing is, Sarah, like those people didn't know any better. I mean, I think about when I was a undergraduate student and like how ready and willing I was to give feedback. And like, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. I just wanted to like sound smart and be part of the conversation. And then I think what happened to me is the opposite, is like as I became more aware of all the different ways of writing, then I became quieter. Because I think I started out too overconfident with giving feedback, and and then like I think about starting at Iowa. And I was super quiet at the beginning of grad school.
Oh, interesting.
Giving feedback. I think if I remember like first semester workshop, I just felt like I had no idea what to say.
Wait, so when you felt more quiet, it was because you were like realizing, oh, there's so much more I don't know?
Yeah. And then, yeah, exactly. Whereas like when I was in high school and college, I just thought I knew everything.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
So what was it that helped you like become more comfortable giving notes?
I think it's like public speaking. You know, it's like you just have to practice, like read as many scripts, talk to as many different people as you can. And then I find myself, okay, like I started to feel comfortable because I think when I found myself giving notes and then I see that like their mind working, or like sometimes I'm like, you could kind of tell when they're being receptive and they're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I like that note. Like then you're like, oh, I think I'm going somewhere with this. And so you're kind of learning that, you're kind of cataloging those, and then the way you're providing that feedback. So I'm like, okay, so if I ask certain questions, or like if I – after reading the script, I point out certain things, or, you know, it's just like a practice thing that you develop. But yeah, it's like the more you do it, and I really think the more variety of work and all the different personalities you give note to, it really does make it better for you.
So it sounds like part of what you're talking about is just adapting your feedback in the moment. As you're watching the the artist or writer hear that feedback and like how they respond to it.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that came from just, I think sketch comedy did really help me in that way, because before going into sketch comedy, we have this like idea about, oh, the notes being too prescriptive. Like some writers don't like if it's too prescriptive or not prescriptive enough or something. Yeah. But there's this like, we're very careful and like we're kind of like walking on eggshells sometimes. But in sketch comedy, especially with comedians, it's like they're having to pitch like 100 jokes a minute or something. You know, they're like,
whoa.
They're, yeah. It's like, it's really fast. Like I'm like, when we read a sketch and then there's like 13 people in the room all giving me like 30 jokes, you know?
Yeah.
Then it's like, it becomes like less precious and you're like, okay, like this is the engine that we're working here and like this is how we need to figure it out as a team, and we're like, let's do this. You know, what's the funniest out of all the jokes people said? What did we all laugh at, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like that level of just like that. I think it's like that quantity. Well, it's obviously different. Like some people are like, quality is better than quantity, but in this case, when it came to sketch comedy, it was like in joke writing or jokes, it's like quantity is better. And then
yeah,
I feel like that,
and
that
what
let
you come
me
to
let go.
Realize is like there's always going to be more ideas. And so it's not a big deal if somebody turns down an idea, because you can come up with 100 more.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that's why it was like, okay, part of me was like starting to let go of this like self-conscious feeling. And I was like, okay, there's a lot more here than just me, myself, and I. And I really let go of that ego. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I also, when I think about receiving feedback, you know, now versus when I was younger, I think I spent a lot of years as a young writer thinking like I had to be good and I had to be talented, and like if I wrote something that wasn't good, that meant I wasn't talented, you know? Like, it took me a long time to understand that all of it is about process, and first drafts always suck. And, you know, like it's really not about writing something that's good the first time. It's so much more about working at it and getting feedback and responding to that feedback. And so I think that just like learning how to value that feedback and respond to it is such an important part of being a writer. So I know there are a couple different tried and true methods of structuring feedback. And one of the things I learned as a teacher, like just out of college, was, you know, you should always give criticism in a sandwich. So you start with something positive, and then you say something they can improve on, and then you end with something positive, which is, I guess, also, you know, very common in terms of like how employers give feedback to employees. Like, hey, Joe, like you're doing a great job with this.
Yeah.
We want you to do a little better at that. But, you know, overall, we're really happy with this other thing, you know, and I just feel like at a certain point that becomes so formulaic. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, it's so funny that you say that. Yeah, that is, I think that is how I first approach giving notes. It's like that method. And I think it's really like, I want to just test the waters here. Like what's the temperature here right now? Where is this person coming from? Like, let's see if anything resonates or not, you know? And then, but it's also kind of like, especially if I don't really know that person well. And
yeah,
you know, I just don't know their level of sensitivity or receptiveness to feedback. So yeah, I think that positive and then criticism, positive, that sandwich, I think that works.
One of the things I like about it, especially when I'm you know, leading a workshop with young people giving feedback to each other is that it forces them to first start with something that's working. Like, you can't jump right into something that's not working. You have to kind of practice finding things that are working. And I think that's definitely a valuable skill. Because you can always find something to praise.
And then, you know, if something is working and they're doing it really well, it's like, why not do more of it if it if they can or maybe it's another way to go into that you know, whatever it is that they're doing well as a gateway to, like, here's some other ways of exploring that way of writing of that's so true.
So at Iowa, we used, in a workshop, we used kind of a modified form of the Liz Lerman critical response process, which I think it might be helpful to just go through the steps, because I find that this feedback structure is really helpful when teaching. And I've used it a lot in my college classes and high school classes, because it shifts the, it gives the writer more agency than in a typical feedback process, which I think, like, traditionally in a writing workshop, the writer's not supposed to say anything. They're just supposed to kind of receive. And Liz Lerman, who's a choreographer, has come up with this process that gives the artist or writer a lot of agency in guiding the conversation and kind of seeking out information that's helpful to them. So this has four steps. It starts with people, respondents, so audience members or people who are encountering the work, say what's meaningful or what resonates. And so at Iowa, remember, we would do like what popped. And then after that, I think we reversed these two steps, but in the Liz Lerman process, after, the next step is the artist asks questions of the respondents, and then the respondents ask neutral questions, meaning they don't have an opinion in them. And the artist responds to those if they want. And then the final step is when you get into opinions and suggestions. And I really like that she makes that a step at the end, because it, it means that most of the conversation is just describing the work. And it's so tempting to, like, jump into a critique and start saying how you think the person should rewrite their play. But it's much more valuable, I think, and helpful for the writer to hear, oh, I was confused at this point, or, oh, I got curious about this thing at this point, or, oh, that moment was so exciting because blah, blah, blah. And just kind of describe your experience back to them before you get into your own opinions and suggestions.
Yeah, and I love this method because it's just very, like, clear, like, step one, step two, step three, like, to get through and, like, organize these. Because, you know, it could, if there was no method or any kind of process whatsoever, like, it could be chaos, out of control.
Yes.
And sometimes, like, organizing, I'm like, what do you, okay, that sounds like opinion, that sounds like a question. So I feel like that's why it comes, if we, like, even if there's no like a moderator in the group or whatever, but, like, to, as a group, we recognize the process.
Yeah.
And it's helpful in terms of that nice and, like, streamlining the feedback in a way that makes sense.
Well, especially because a lot of times we're not that good at separating out our personal taste from, like, an objective or neutral description of the work. You know, we're just so quick to say, oh, this is bad. You know, this is boring.
Right.
This is X, this is Y, without recognizing that that's about us rather than about the piece itself. And just because
so true.
you know, like, I'm really not a good audience for action movies because I think they're so dumb and boring. I think I would have a hard time separating out my, like, I can't even describe how I would give feedback to an action movie without laughing.
Right. So. And the taste is so true because, but what's so cool, right, is by removing that, those opinions and very subjective opinions, right? When you remove that, put that at the end, but then so everyone is coming from like very different perspectives and like different, like providing their taste, but without, being about them. They're just kind of just how they see the world, how they approach the work.
Yeah.
And kind of getting that perspective, like, oh, okay, like Sam's not into action, Sarah's into action, but like Sarah's finding moments, but she's not saying it's action, you know. It's like, okay, like,
right,
we'll get like all the different ideas. And so that's where I feel like that excites me to go rewrite, is when it's like these thoughts, these questions, these ideas is getting me expand the, like, my own work further. Mm-hmm, and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm so excited. Like, I want to explore what Sam just said about this. Like, because I would never think that way. I would never think, but she pointed something out and that sounds interesting. And then, so yeah.
Can you give an example of like your favorite, a time when you got really good feedback or a type of note that you really like to get?
Let's see. I'm currently in the process of rewriting one of my plays, which is like a zombie play. And I think it was like 5 years ago, we shared in workshop. And then recently, before the pandemic, it was like, the timing is great. I shared it with my writers group here in LA, and it was kind of like, okay, after having some time apart between that first reading and then my new draft and hearing people's response, it was, I think, that feedback, I learned a lot more about, the second time around before the pandemic. The feedback I got from my writer's group, it was like, a lot of them are like, they're playwrights, but they're also like pursuing TV. But then they were also – so they were kind of giving me a lot of – they're pointing out, like, plot holes. They're pointing out, well, like, contradictions. You know, like, well, she was holding 5 bananas here, but then she ends up with 10. Like, where does she get those 5 bananas? You know, it's like, oh, yeah. I don't know. Something about that. Like, I don't know. It's like – because if I just go and I think about it deeply even more when they point out those moments, then I'm like, oh, okay. I need to think about this deeply, a little bit more about the story and the character. Like, how did that character go from point A to point B? Because I feel like when I'm so into my play that I just lose sight of all those things. And then, yeah. So having that objective eyes is helpful. So I think I like that.
That's so true. It can become so hard to think about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you're caught in individual moments or ideas and you kind of lose perspective.
Yeah. So this zombie play that I'm writing is, they helped me in that. And I don't know, I think just giving myself that 4-year gap like of time.
Yeah.
Visiting it was helpful because I feel like as a person I've changed. So I'm like another objective view. So
I love that play so much. Do you want to just give like our listeners a little taste of what it's about?
Okay. Well, the title right now is called Hotel Z by My Change, but basically the play was inspired by just how like during a a virus. Like, I can't even describe it now. Thanks a lot, Sam. But
I did kind of put you on the spot.
No, you didn't. I mean, it's it's because I'm still like having to, I feel like I'm constantly changing it even in the moment right now of like what's it about. But it was inspired by back in the day when SARS hit, and my uncle said to me, Koreans will never get SARS because we eat kimchi. Like,
I forgot about that.
We're like, so it came from that moment in my life where I was just like, it's not about that, but I'm taking that attitude and I'm trying to explore in this like zombie apocalyptic world where like in this world only Asians are getting this virus, or that's what the perception is, and about how the Asians feel about each other. And then there's this, it's all taking place in this, and I don't know. So,
and it's in a hotel, right? And all these people are trapped in the hotel together.
Yeah, and they're all like afraid of like the zombies are out there. They're Asians. I think the Asians have it, but then they don't have it. So it's just like I'm just like trying to play with more paranoia than anything. But yeah, I'm still working out the story because it's kind of wonky, but we'll see.
Well, you mentioned how you took 4 years away from it, and I think that can be so helpful for revising because. I know that I have to be able to give myself a break from a piece in order to come back to it with fresh eyes and try to give notes to myself. Mm-hmm. When you returned to it after 4 years, did you have specific ideas of what you wanted to work on?
Yes and no. I think there were these like elements in the play that I was like, do I want to keep it or remove it? And so I kind of had like 3 or 4 questions in my head about certain characters or certain scenes if I wanted to just completely remove it and just do a whole new rewrite or brand new character or like a brand new scene. Mm-hmm. So I was going through each scene through the play, thinking about do I want like yes or no, like do I want it or not kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so – yeah, I think that was kind of just the main thing. So I ended up removing like maybe 5 pages and like adding 10 pages mm-hmm. new to it, to the play. So yeah, it's so hard because like I don't know if it's gonna work or not. But
yeah,
based on the feedback I got from, you know, from Iowa and then my recent writers group, I'm just kind of figuring out what were the feedback like. What was interesting, I still had my notes from Iowa, so I was looking at questions and thoughts that people had. Mm-hmm. And then were there any same questions again from my writer's group?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, because maybe there's something true there that after all this time that people still have the same thoughts and feedback, that those are the ones that I should go to and change or answer. Because there might be some truth there.
So can you talk a little bit about that process of taking notes? And, you know, people might be wondering, like, what do you do with all those notes after you get feedback?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that I was doing this, but this is what I was doing. And then I found an article that kind of talked about how organizing writing feedback was. So there's an article, I'll link it out. It's by David Safford. And so unknowingly, what I was kind of doing first was, and I'm like a type A person, so this may not work for everybody, but so it's similar way how you're talking about like statements and the questions, right? Mm-hmm. I was kind of like categorizing the feedback where like, okay, all of the feedback notes, first of all, they're coming at you left and right in all directions.
Yeah.
Especially they're not following any especially my writer's group, we don't like really follow it like this format really. And so they're coming at me, they're coming with opinions, they're coming with very subjective thoughts, prescriptive notes, left and right, all over the place. And then I just write it all down. And then what I would do go back is, okay, what all of these notes are for story, all of these notes are for character, all these notes are for like surface level, like, oh, here's a grammar, or all these notes are so I kind of like almost break it down mm-hmm. and then because I feel like I need to first organize it all and then I could like tackle it, what people say, actionable items, you know, it's like bite size I think Deborah said that from her interview list, like bite-sized actionable goals. So I get all the feedback and I have to first organize it. Like I'll just type it up and then put in a document. I'm like, okay. So I'll first think about all the story, questions about story first, and then see if it relates to character. And I'm like, and look at all the character questions and comments. And then look at all the dialogue questions and comments and thoughts. So it's very maybe a little too practical, but that's how I first approach it.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's too practical. I mean, I think you have to like just kind of take stock of the feedback and you have to sort through it. And I think that can be so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of young writers, like a lot of times my students, they come into a workshop, especially if it's maybe their first workshop experience, and they're really just expecting it, you know, people to be like, oh, I loved it, or fix this, you know? And then they find out that actually they're going to get a lot more information than that. And so it can be super overwhelming to just receive all of that information. And it's like some of it's really big picture stuff and some of it's really granular. And so I think that makes total sense to organize it in that way. I've never really done that. I write everything down while I'm hearing the feedback and then I put it away. And oftentimes just go into a new draft with like one thought or one idea that is top of mind. And then it's not till later, like a couple drafts later, I'll go back and look at those feedback notes. I don't know why, but I find it really hard to implement them right away. I have to let them kind of percolate in my subconscious.
And then there might be just one thought, one note just might be enough.
Yeah, definitely.
The one that really like stuck with you and then like stayed with you might be just enough for the next new draft.
The thing is, a lot of times people, I remember somebody telling us this, I probably said this on the podcast before, but a lot of times people, when they're first experiencing a play, especially if it's a reading and they don't have it in front of them, they're pretty good at identifying when something is not working, you know, or like that something is not working. They can tell you, oh, at the end of act two, I get a little lost. But like they're really not great at telling you how to fix it. And yet that's what they always want to do. Everyone has ideas about how to fix something.
Right.
And I think what's useful really for the playwright is, oh, something's not working. And I'm going to get 10 different opinions on why it's not working and how to change it. But the really valuable piece of information is that it's not working, you know? And like, I have to figure out by doing a deep look at the whole play, maybe over many hours, I really have to figure out how to fix it. But
I feel like when I've like playwriting instructors, when we have like, oh, they read my play and then they're like giving me, or like one-on-one meeting and then they're like giving me thoughts about their play and stuff, they always tell me, you just need to write more. You just need to write more. You just need to write more. And I'm like, okay.
It like, sounds like you find that annoying.
At the time, I think so, because I'm like, well, I want to fix this thing that's in front of me right now before I write the next one, you know. It's like so
you're interpreting that as like you need to write other pieces, like you have to write new pieces.
And I think it's just like the more I wrote different play, like the more I kept writing, it really does unlock something where, okay, I am learning this craft. I'm like, I'm learning moments. I'm learning to write scenes here. And the more I do it, then you're starting to develop this ability to like identify, you know, you're like, how you're like seeing the acts and then you're like seeing the moments, you're like, oh, this kind of works in certain ways. Like you're, the more you write. And so, yeah. And so I was just like, but yeah, it was just like, that's what every teacher would tell me. It was just like, you just need to write more. You just need to write more. And I'm like, okay, sounds like you're copping out right now and you are leaving me behind. Bye. What kind of teacher are you? Bye. I'm just like, no one gets left behind. You're leaving me behind. but yeah. But I think now, I don't know.
But it sounds like they were actually, to continue with your metaphor of leaving you behind, they were saying, keep walking. And you were like, no, carry me.
yeah, no, carry me. Let me ride your back and give me a piggyback ride. Yeah, you're right. That kind of sounds like that. Funny. Oh, gosh.
Do you think personality affects the kind of notes we give?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, do you go to different people for different kinds of feedback?
I think so. All right. So the different personality types, right? There are different people that I feel aren't very good at, you know, being receptive to notes, or like are not very generous, or, you know, they're just like different types of people that I don't know where they're coming from. And so I find myself like, maybe this person only wants to hear one thing and I'm just going to give them that one thing and I'm just going to not give it anymore. I feel like the first like 2 minutes, if you're pretty self-aware, you're like, okay, they're already block tuning me out. So I'll just end this note here.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then when I'm looking for notes, I feel like I have like a list of people, that I want to share the work to, you know? And yeah. So first and always is Nick. He is like my first, like, he's a writer too. So
what kind of feedback does Nick give? What's his style?
It's very, very, I don't know what's the word, common sense. Like,
it's like practical,
very practical, common sense. Like it's, and I think it's because, you know, his background is like screenwriting, he's writing a novel, advertising. So it's very like, but he's also been a teacher. Like he's also been like a teacher to young people for like 10 years. So he's like also very like kind. Like he's really good at giving those notes in a very.
That's such a good combination.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like I won a jackpot. So when I give him a play or like a script to read, he kind of does what we do. Like, oh, he like tells me like what's working, like what he likes about it. And he tells me, and he's probably the one that I feel like has, I don't want to say forced to read, but I give him my word, like, give me notes right now.
He doesn't have a choice. That sounds like forced.
But like he has read and seen my work in the last, like the most recent years, like all collectively. And so I feel like in terms of me as a person and my personality, like he's starting to see what I'm trying to do and develop, and he like sees that. And so when he gives me notes, it's like he sees my strengths. So he's like, you're doing what you like to do. You're doing what you're doing well here. Like that's what you do. But then he's really good in giving notes on like story, because like I think that's just his bread and butter. This is his, like, it's just like he could really point out like this beginning, middle, end, and just like where it connects really well, where it could improve more. He never says like, this sucks. Like this. Why didn't you?
That's good.
That's That's good. She never does that. So that's great. Oh my gosh. But I think it's him just like, I think it's just him always giving notes because like that's just part of his job and getting notes.
Yeah. And then do you give him feedback on his writing too?
He let me read like a first chapter of his book and then I shared some ideas or thoughts and how I loved it and then he just never gave me anything. I don't know what I did wrong. But you know, he's
so inspired. He was like, I'm gonna go write more.
He's a Taurus, right? So he's just taking time and he's like routine and he's like until it's like absolutely finished. He's done what he needed to do when he's ready. He doesn't like anything too early, like everything's ready and feels confident, then he'll send it and give it to me. But as a whole piece. But me, I'm all about like in development. So I'm like, all right, this is 0.5 draft, so read it.
Well, see, I'm really glad you brought this up because I think one thing that's super hard for me is to get feedback on something that I haven't yet written the ending of. And so I've learned this about myself. And so I've become much more careful. I find it really hard to finish a piece if I've already had feedback on the beginning. I don't know why, but it's like I freeze and I find it really hard to move forward. And so I don't like to share things that are in development. And like the ending might change. You know, I might write something and have a complete piece and then get feedback and rewrite the whole thing. But somehow the ability for me to reach the end of a piece, it is tied up in like not having, it's like being alone with it throughout the first draft. Like I have to, it's like, I don't know, I think of it like an egg, cracking an egg or opening a cocoon before the little being inside is finished developing and it kills it. And so I have to be alone with something while I'm writing the first draft. And then once I have an ending, even if the ending is going to change, then I can get feedback on it. And I guess then you like what you're saying, like draft 2.5, like that's, I have no problem getting feedback on like a partial revision, but I don't know. When I receive feedback on the beginning of something or the beginning and middle of something, like I really lose momentum and find it hard to finish. Well, do you have any other final thoughts about feedback, giving feedback, receiving feedback?
The only thing that comes to mind, and I think it's because I had this conversation recently with Nick, is like if there are several people giving you the same note, maybe you should take that note. If it's like been consistent and it's like same questions, same very constructive comments or like thoughts that your script maybe needs, just take it. And then maybe it's like all different people. It could be your closest friends, your peer, your lover, whoever's giving you all the same note, just take it.
Yeah.
Because there might be something true to that.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
What are my final thoughts?
Final thoughts.
I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about I was working with high school students this summer on creative writing, and, you know, when they wanted feedback on their work, I would kind of go through the steps of describing what I was seeing and like posing questions for further development and talking about, you know, what was exciting about it. And, you know, a lot of times the students would be like, but did you like it? You know, am I a good writer? You know, they really just wanted they wanted affirmation and validation, and they wanted somebody to be like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. And which, you know, I see nothing wrong with doing that as a teacher. I actually think that's a really important part of being a teacher. But it's like at a certain point as a writer, you have to stop associating an individual piece with your self-worth and ability as a writer, you know, that you have to learn how to separate those two things and receive feedback on the piece without taking it as existential commentary on who you are. And I just think that's the hardest thing to learn. And it takes time. I don't know I have not encountered very many high school students who are capable of doing that.
I've like cornered a teacher to and literally be like, who am I? Who do you think I am? Who do you tell me? I've done that. Like I've like
and what did your teacher say?
They're like, you're interesting, you're funny, you're
please let me go.
Please let me go. I have a class to teach.
But it's so true. I mean, I think young people are looking for information about who they are at the same time that they're looking for feedback on, you know, a 5-minute play that they wrote. Right. And those two things get really, really tangled up. And so I guess I would say, you know, if you're a listener out there in the ether, no matter how old you are, if you're having trouble separating feedback on your work from feedback on you as a human being, take a deep breath, be patient with yourself. It's okay to have a hard time with that, but just remember that this is one thing that you created and does not represent the sum of you as a human being. That's me.
You're in this class. I feel like you got onto a very nice podium and you spoke to the world.
That's what I try to do here.
And in the audience, this is just me. Just like, yeah.
Thank you for your support.
Oh, man.
All right, let's go to Glissons.
All right, let's put down questions. I hope listeners, I don't know, you found any of this helpful. If you did, let us know what your thoughts were. If you have your own process or...
Yeah, and tell us about how you give and receive feedback.
Yeah. All right, glissons. Oh my gosh, my week is full of glissons.
You're going to have 10 glissons. Everyone buckle up.
Okay, everyone buckle up. Okay, so the first couple are the TV. I watched HBO Raised by the Wolves, the first 3 episodes that came out this week. Watched it all. Incredible. If you're really into science fiction, bleak, sad, really just if you want your mind to be blown with ideas about religion – and human race and survival. Raised by the Wolves is great. Amazon.
There's no wolves.
Not yet. Okay. The season isn't over.
I don't know. I really take issue with that title. You'll have to let me know if anything changes.
I'll keep you posted. There were these, spoiler alert, but there were these like monster-like things that popped up that looked like wolves.
Oh.
But they're not wolves, but I'll keep you posted.
All right. Thank you.
Next, I binged the first season of The Boys that's on Amazon. It is this reverse, like, think about all the superhero, like, Marvel movies you could think of, right? Mm-hmm. Take that world. In this TV show, those superheroes are evil. And they're part of this, like,
what?
Corporation. Oh, yes.
My God. Why would you want to watch that?
Because it's actually fun. It's like fun to watch, about, it's like, it's just fun to see that switch, like it's something different perspective. And it's funny. The writing is really funny. And really grotesque. The show is very grotesque. But it really opens your eyes about like corporations, marketing and those, like the way those narratives are kind of changing or shifting the way we see things, you know? So So that's kind of a cool take on superhero. And then I was learning how to draw. I've been trying to learn how to draw.
Oh, cool.
I don't know. I've been like watching like videos and because like I was like, I don't know. I have all this time now. What is one thing I want to learn this week? And I was like, I want to learn how to draw, sketch something. So I've been drawing a lot of apples.
Oh, cool.
That I don't like, the fruits that I don't like.
Why do you have fruits that you don't like?
Why am I drawing them?
No, why do you have them in your apartment?
I actually don't. I don't have apples. I don't like apples.
Are you drawing a picture from like a computer screen?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's like they were just picking some of the videos are like picking household object, or they were using apple as their example, so I was just copying them and I was like trying to draw apples.
I think you should draw a portrait of Butters. That's her cat.
I'll do a portrait of Butters. So, but what was interesting is like, what is drawing? Is like, it's not just imitating, it could be also different ways. Like, they're like, have fun. They're like, just want, like, give yourself rules. Like, don't pick up the pen. Or pick up the pen and just, and all in one line, draw that object. And what does that look like? You know, it's all just kind of like, so it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of fun.
All right, here's a really meta question for you, Sarah.
Yeah.
Would you ever ask Nick for feedback on your drawing?
It's too soon.
It's too soon. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Because all you want to hear right now is keep going.
Right.
Keep drawing. Yeah. You just need to draw more.
But who am I? Tell me who I am. I've been drawing. The last one is my last glisten of the week is
so many glistens.
I know. It's just been a really big week. I started this read as many scripts as I can in the month of September.
I thought it was just one a day.
Well, it was one a day. And now I'm just like, let's just see how much I could go, because I put this out there into the world, into Twitterverse. And holy cow, so many people. I think it got retweeted like 30 times. And I got like 80, I don't know how many comments I got.
But
there were a lot of scripts out there, especially on New Play Exchange. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to read it. I'm going to read as many as I can, because there's a lot out there. And you know what? I haven't ever reviewed scripts or recommended scripts on New Play Exchange. So I'm just like reading one and I'm just going to like say what I liked about it.
Cool.
And so this week though, I think there are a couple scripts that I was like stood out to me.
So how many have you read so far? It's only September 4th.
I've read 7.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah. A couple of them are short, like 30, like one act plays. So I didn't give anything about page numbers. Let's see. Okay, so I really liked Robert Alexander Ray's Melancholy Echo. That was really interesting. It was very emotional. It's like a one person play, but there's a play that I wanted to compare to, but can't remember that play. But it's about this like priest, and then he's like kind of like sharing his world or point of view. And then the other one was like This Vessel Is a Fragile Thing by Britt Willis. I really like that one.
That's very, a good title.
Yeah, and it's all about like body, like the way we look at bodies and body dysmorphia, and so that was interesting. And then this is a tie, and it was because you recommended me, and we had a guest last week, Deborah. But I read Atlas, The Last Gibbon.
Oh my god, I love that play. It's
really good, and I honestly, after I read that play, I went into my kitchen, I unplugged Google, it was really, I was like, oh my god, I'm too wired. I have too many things wired to me. But yeah, so there's just like, I'm hoping to read more today, tomorrow. I don't know for how long. till the end of September, right? Yeah. Okay. So yeah. But all that's right. My glisten. Well,
look forward to hearing more about all these plays. All right. Well, my glisten is a completely different kind of glisten, which is that I don't know how it took me so long to do this, but I roasted in a low oven for a long time cherry tomatoes, and they're so good. I read about this on Smitten Kitchen, and because I have so many cherry tomatoes and they're starting to go bad, and I was like, what am I going to do with all these tomatoes? I want to have them in the winter. So anyway, so she recommends roasting them, and then you can freeze them. But even like a lot of them do not make it to the freezer because they're just so delicious. I just keep eating them. It's like all you have to do is put them in 300 degree oven, cut them in half, put a little olive oil on, like on a sheet pan, and then roast them for 90 minutes in the 300 degree oven. And they are so good.
Are you like drying them out?
They do dry out in the oven. Mm-hmm. It's like they get super flavorful and a lot of the moisture evaporates. So they get kind of dried out and like very concentrated flavor. Wow. And then you can, you know, put them in pasta or like crackers or put them in a salad or just freeze them. So I'm going to have so many tomatoes in the winter.
And you didn't cut them or anything. You're just like, cut them in half. Oh, okay.
Cut them in half and you put them cut side up so that the liquid doesn't like spill out all over the place. It's kind of contained in the skin and then it slowly evaporates.
Wow.
Yeah. So much better than the, you know, quote unquote sun-dried tomatoes you buy in the store.
Okay. I'm going to try that. I think I have
a bunch of tomatoes. Yeah, you should totally try it. Yeah.
I'll try that. Well, there we have it, folks. This is our show. Thank you for joining us.
Stay tuned for some drawings from Sarah Cho on her Instagram account.
I will show you the 10 different apples that I shall create. All right. So tune in next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Ha ha ha.